Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Selling Greenville, your favorite real estate podcast here in Greenville, South Carolina. I'm your host, as always, Stan McCune, realtor right here in the Greenville area. You can find all of my contact information in the show notes if you need to reach out to me for any of your Greenville, South Carolina real estate needs. And just a reminder, as always, please like, rate, review, subscribe, comment, all of those good things on whatever platform you're listening or watching to the show on. That is all I ask of you guys, to get the show out to as many people as possible. So please, if you can just take 1 second to do that, I would really appreciate it. I do see who does it, and some of you guys that I know very well have not subscribed or liked or reviewed or anything with the show. So I would appreciate it if you guys would just take a second to do that. Today we're going to be talking about the Greenville, South Carolina Section 8 program, which is, for those of you that don't know, it's the way that our local government subsidizes rent for people in certain income brackets and in certain situations. There's a lot of confusion about the Section 8 program, and over the years, I've gotten a lot of questions about it. And even though I've talked about it before on the show, I feel like it's necessary to have another discussion about this. And specifically, that's because, for those of you who don't know, I have currently a client that has listed 11 units in Simpsonville, South Carolina, a majority of which, of the 11 units, all on one parcel, they have renters that are Section 8. These units are bringing in close to $14,000 a month, and I have it listed for $1.625 million, which is in line with what other comparable multifamily units have sold for the past few years. Now, needless to say, I've gotten a lot of interest in this property, even with mortgage rates being where they are, but I've gotten a lot of questions from people about the fact that several of the rentals, as I've already said, have Section 8 tenants. And as I've already said, I've gotten a lot of questions in recent months, the past year, et cetera, from people just in general about Section 8. And so, again, it's just time to discuss this again and to try to make sure that we're all on the same page when it comes to this program, for those of you listening to the show that are interested in rentals in the Greenville area. Now, before I start, I want to make sure that you guys know I'm not an expert on the Section 8 program. And just quite frankly, I have some gaps in my knowledge about the program because I always use property managers for my rentals. So a lot of the back end process, getting properties ready for Section 8, negotiating the voucher amounts, visiting tenants as well. I simply have not done that because a lot of that is handled by the property manager, if you have one. But because I've had Section 8 rentals for around 10 years now, I can speak to the program on a high level. And here are my thoughts. For starters, the Section 8 program is designed, as I've already said, to help alleviate homelessness for people who simply do not have the income to afford a home to purchase or a home to rent. Now, typically people who qualify for the program are single parents with multiple children, although there are some exceptions. For instance, homeless veterans who tend to be single men with no children. That is a major exception. Otherwise, it's typically single parents with multiple children. And the Greenville Housing Authority takes into account several factors such as criminal history, family size, income, etc., in determining how many bedrooms and for what dollar amount the voucher that they issued to a person is worth and what they qualify for. So for instance, they may qualify for a two-bedroom voucher for up to $1,200. And at that point, they then need to find a property willing to take a Section 8 tenant for that amount. Now, the tenants with these vouchers have extremely limited options. This is a very, very important detail for those of you interested in learning more about this program. A lot of landlords simply don't participate in Section 8 for one reason or another. That it could be just due to not understanding it, not wanting to mess with it, having misconceptions about it. Who knows? Long story short, it's only a small sliver of rentals available to those who have Section 8 vouchers. And it's already a pretty small sliver of all real estate that's available to renters anyway. So those with Section 8 vouchers really, really have difficulty finding homes typically. And I've communicated with several renters with housing vouchers in the past. They almost all run into frustration with not being able to find not just a home that they would like to live in, but any home at all. And some, quite frankly, end up homeless as a result. They just can't find what they need, even though they have a voucher. I've also been to meetings with the Greenville Housing Authority about the Section 8 program, and they've seen, and I've seen in the program, because they have printouts, they have stats and whatnot, about all the people who have vouchers who still don't have a place to rent. And the numbers are huge, and the Housing Authority seems perplexed as to what to do about it, even though I tried to communicate to them what to do about it. Others have, and that doesn't tend to go anywhere, but it is what it is. Needless to say, this is a situation where there is a ton of demand and low supply. And as a result, sometimes it's easier to fill a rental with a Section 8 tenant than with a private pay one. But there's one more variable in this. The Housing Authority has their own kind of secret way of determining the market rent for a property. So let's say you have a house in Greer. The Housing Authority will look at the location, the type of property, the number of bedrooms in there, and will approve you for a certain amount of rent for a tenant. Now, you can request a number as a landlord, so you might think, you know, hey, it's worth $1,800 a month, this property. And they may or may not approve that. And when you have a Section 8 rental with a tenant that is staying in it from 1 year to the next, each year, the way I understand it, you can request a rent increase. And they often allow rent increases. And I've heard from many people in the past that even if they get declined for the amount that they are asking for, that if they go ahead and really press the Housing Authority, get someone on the phone and all of that, or even in person, that often they can get their requested rent approved, assuming the tenant's voucher goes up that amount. And it's worth mentioning at this point that when a tenant has a housing voucher, it doesn't mean that they will have it forever. Obviously, they can get in trouble with the law and lose their voucher. They can do a whole lot of things. It's very strict who qualifies for these. But also, if they start getting pay raises or work extra and have more income coming in, the Housing Authority can tell them that they are making too much money, unfortunately, for their housing to be completely subsidized by the program. And if that sounds like that the Housing Authority is perhaps encouraging people not to work, well, that's an argument that you could certainly make. In these cases, and by the way, the Housing Authority would say that they don't do that. They really do try to encourage people to work. And they explain all these things on the front end. And the people that are getting these vouchers, my understanding is they are required to attempt to work, right? It's not just a straight, just subsidy for people to just have free housing without work. So I'll make sure that I say that. But anyway, in these cases, when people start making more income than what their voucher allows for, they usually don't lose the entire voucher all at the same time, but now have to pay a copay. So if their voucher was $1,500 and Section 8 was paying all of that, now they might have to start paying $500 of that per month, and the Housing Authority will pay the other $1,000. This doesn't usually end up being an issue, right? Because if the person, you know, the way the formulas are with the Housing Authority, they know what the people can or can't afford based on their income. And so if they can't afford the copay, usually they don't have the copay, right? Hopefully that makes sense. So it doesn't usually end up being an issue, but it is a scenario that can happen. You can have midway through a one-year lease, all of a sudden the tenant that has to start making payments directly out of their own money, as opposed to just having it entirely paid by the Greenville Housing Authority. So I think that's a detail that a lot of people get confused about, that you just need to be aware of it and aware that it's not necessarily the end of the world if part of the housing voucher is having to be paid, co-paid by the tenant. It's still going to be the same thing where they still have to approve the total rent, right? So they're not just approving what the Housing Authority is paying for it. So they would still say this tenant qualifies for up to $1,500 and they have to bring $500 of that. And so they would still be, it doesn't make a difference. You can't say, well, if the Housing Authority is paying $1,000 of this and they originally said it would be worth $1,500, now my tenant is co-paying $500. Well, I'm just going to raise that to $1,800 and they have to pay $800. No, it doesn't work that way. You can't quite game the system like that. Now, most would probably assume that market rents for Section 8 would be lower than standard market rents. But as I've already said, we have a major imbalance of supply and demand. Because supply is so low, the housing authority will often approve rents above standard market rents for an area. And so that might not make sense to you, right? But I'm telling you, I've seen this over and over again, that Section 8 rents in certain situations exceed market rents. Now, with all that in mind, let me address for a moment a message that I got recently from someone interested in the 11 units I have listed in Simpsonville. This person told me, after sending me a gazillion questions and having several phone calls, that that they were not interested anymore, in part because of the future of the Section 8 program is unpredictable. They said something to that effect. Now, I have been with the Section 8 program for around 10 years. My client selling this property in Simpsonville, they've been with it for roughly 16 years. And I know a lot of other people that have been involved in the program. And as far as I know, for everyone, we've never seen rents go down. For me, for them, for a lot of others, I've never heard of any people involved in the program, in the Section 8 program, that have seen rents go down in a year. In fact, I mentioned before about how from 1 year to the next, you can ask for rent increases, and Section 8 is usually very good about that. Usually they will do, at the very least, a small rent increase, like maybe a $25 or $50 per month rent increase. That has been my experience, and that's been the experience of many others. In fact, with these units we have in Simpsonville, we saw a massive increase for one of the units that had been renting for around $900 a month. That was on the private pay market. They switched over to Section 8, and it instantly jumped to almost $1,300 per month. So, unpredictability is, you can make complaints about the Section 8 program however you want. Some people don't like government subsidies. Some people, are concerned about this or concerned about that. We'll talk about a few concerns here in a little bit. But one of the things that is not a concern, I'm telling you, that I have, is the unpredictability of the Section 8 program. We don't see rents go down. They go up consistently, even in down rental markets. And yes, there are down rental markets. We talked about this a few times on the show. I've seen multiple of them in my years in real estate. It can happen for a variety of reasons. Usually the rental market follows the broader economy. If the broader economy goes into recession, then that's going to be a negative for the rental market. But the Section 8 program operates with such a deficit of housing supply that what happens in the broader rental market simply doesn't apply. You cannot look at what's happening in the broader rental market and see, okay, rents, we're in a kind of a rent recession right now. We're seeing rent deflation, whatever the case may be. That typically, in my experience, does not translate to what's happening in the Section 8 rental market. So the irony of this person being hesitant to purchase Section 8 rentals on the basis of unpredictability is literally the exact opposite of his assumption is true. Not only is the program very predictable. Sorry, I can't talk tonight. I am recording this at night. That's probably why I'm too tired. But anyway, not only is the program very predictable, but I've actually found it to be far more predictable and far more stable than the volatility that you experience in the general rental market. Additionally, the system the Housing Authority has in place is honestly pretty amazing. They just direct deposit each month's rent straight into your account within the first few days of the month. No hassle. No checks you have to deposit, no chasing down tenants or anything like that. It's just a direct deposit. Now, the tenant is still responsible for their own security deposit. Although I've seen instances even where Section 8 landlords have successfully negotiated for the housing authority to subsidize a higher deposit. And of course, even though the housing authority does some basic screening of people getting housing vouchers, and the housing authority also claims that they attempt to educate these tenants on how to be good tenants, right? How to take care of property and whatnot. Tenant screening by the landlord is just as important for these renters as they are for any, perhaps more important, because a lot of these single parents come from abusive backgrounds. They might lack the knowledge and the understanding that they need in order to really be good tenants, even though they've been, quote unquote, educated by the housing authority. So they still need to be vetted by the landlord. If you're taking a Section 8 renter, don't assume that, you know, whatever they tell you that the housing authority has done in order to approve them is enough. You still need to do your own research and still need to look into these tenants to see what their background is and ask hard questions. Maybe even meet with them, see where they're living, check out the space that they're in to see where they currently are, to see if they're taking care of it, things like that. Assuming that it's not, you're not completely violating their privacy, right? So that's something to keep in mind. But why don't more landlords rent to Section 8 tenants, right? Here's where we're going to get into the complaints for a second. By the way, this show is not going to be too long. It's been a busy week. And I just want to get this material out to you guys and then be gone. I'm not going to drag this out. Two reasons why I hear landlords primarily complain about the Section 8 program. One is that they feel like the tenants will be bad to their property, or they've had tenants that were part of the Section 8 program that did damage to their property. But as I already said, you have to do tenant screening. So I don't really consider this a legitimate excuse for not being a part of the Section 8 program. If you know what you're doing when you do good tenant screening, you will get good tenants that don't damage your property. It's literally that simple. However, the second reason I hear frequently is more legitimate, and that is that the Section 8 inspections that they do to make sure the property is compliant with the housing authority's set of guidelines can be frustrating. And it's not that the house has to be pristine, right? Their inspectors don't go in and, you know, say that all these things, you know, we need to have brand new cabinets, we need to have granite countertops, you know, great paint everywhere, none of that kind of stuff. It's just that there are sometimes frustrating government regulations that you have to comply with that don't make sense. Think of it as needing to bring a property partially up to code, even though the standard renter would not care at all whether the home was up to code or not. It feels frustrating to be penalized as a landlord or a landlady, knowing that I could rent this out to anyone and nobody would care that this railing is like half a foot lower than what code requires, but because I'm doing Section 8, the housing authority is making me fix this railing. You know, those are the kinds of stupid things that can come up, but unfortunately, it's part of what the government does and what they deem to be necessary in order to protect the tenants. I understand wanting to protect tenants. I'm not saying they shouldn't do that. It's just that sometimes what the inspectors require to be done really don't protect the tenants in the way that they might think it does. The other frustrating element of these inspections is that sometimes you'll get different inspectors that have different standards. Same problem that you have with the zoning and code enforcement, all of that. Greenville County and Greenville City, bad at sending different inspectors that have different requirements. Same thing when it comes to Section 8 inspections. So you might have one inspector that, you know, comes from a commercial contracting background and makes you do a bunch of stuff beyond even what the housing authority actually requires because he simply feels it's necessary based on his background, right? He wants to be Captain America over here and go beyond the letter of the law to add additional restrictions that are just not necessary. I had one time tell me my foundation was shot on a property that I had, and it was like, that's absolute baloney. He didn't even go in the crawl space to look at the foundation. He was just basing it off of something that he saw on the outside that showed that he didn't know what he was talking about. And then next time you might get a different inspector who has more common sense and lets certain things fly that maybe even the letter of the law says should be corrected. So you just don't know what you'll get. And honestly, that's more frustrating to me than the housing authority inspectors just being strict straight across the board. But at the end of the day, those are really the only two objections that I hear from people about being in the Section 8 program is the tenants, a misunderstanding that they don't have to screen tenants, or maybe they are screening tenants, they're just not doing a good job of it and they keep getting bad tenants. And then also the frustration with inspectors and the requirements that they will impose on the properties as well. But all in all, the Section 8 program can be a great one for landlords, particularly for those wanting a hedge against rent deflation. This is something I haven't said before, and this isn't financial advice. But again, sometimes market rents do come down for one reason or another, but I've personally never seen that with Section 8. So if the only rentals you have are in the private pay market, you may want to consider whether you need a rent deflation hedge, such as the one that the Section 8 program provides. Discuss that with your financial advisor, because like I said, that's not financial advice. And then once you do, reach out to me about the 11 units that I have listed in Simpsonville, and let's talk about that. Let's talk about whether there is an opportunity there for you in order to diversify your real estate portfolio and have something that perhaps you don't have currently. But to come at me and say that the Housing Aid program is unpredictable is really, really outrageous. First off, all real estate is unpredictable, right? If you're going to make that argument, then get out of real estate. This is, yes, real estate is more predictable than, you know, a lot of other things out there, but there's always unpredictability. There's always fluctuation. We just had a whole episode. I talked about bubbles in real estate, and it's hard to identify bubbles. It should be easy in theory, right? There's so many different people analyzing the real estate market, so many economists looking at things, realtors, lenders, the government, now the Department of Justice, all sorts of different eyes on real estate, and still we can't identify bubbles very easily, right? I'm trying to do that, but it's hard. And same thing with all real estate. It's hard to know, you know, none of us realized during COVID when all this stimulus was being pumped into the economy. People were getting all these checks from first from President Trump and then from President Biden. People didn't realize that ended up happening is that caused a ton of inflation in the rental market. So now people had all of this money that they were sitting on. They could afford things that they couldn't afford before. People were putting higher security deposits down than ever. People were getting in bidding wars for rentals. It was crazy. That's something that you never could have foreseen. Well, guess what? That didn't really impact the Section 8 program. The Section 8 program, much more stable, much more steady, and it is not impacted as much by all of these fluctuations that we experience in the market as a whole. So I think that there is, and I'm not just saying this because I have listings that have Section 8 tenants in them, I truly do believe that having rentals that are a part of Section 8 is potentially, depending on what your portfolio is, a good way to diversify your portfolio in real estate in order to make sure that you're not overexposed in the private pay market. Again, that's not financial advice. It depends on what you personally are doing, and you need to talk to your financial advisor about that. But that is, generally speaking, something that I feel for myself and for others, depending on their specific situation. So I hope that makes sense. It clears the air about the Section 8 program. If you guys have any specific follow-up questions on any of that, please let me know. I'm happy to talk to you about that. My contact information is in the show notes. You can reach me that way. And then please, if you like this content, again, subscribe. That's the number one thing to do. Subscribe to it, rate, review, comment, like, all of those good things. iTunes, Audioboom, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, YouTube, all of those good things. And once you do that, then that will make me very happy. That's it for today's episode. I appreciate you guys listening, watching, all of those good things. We will talk again next time.